What's going on, guys? It's Venomous Fat Man here, the Epic One. I'm here on The Bit, The Boys in the Tube, and right now I'm sitting down with OJ, also known as John Harrington, from the show. You know that if you guys have ever checked out the show over on Jan Rambo Presents, you know he's over there. He does Schnoz Man and Hole Punch, and he's also on Project 7 with DSP as well. So, OJ, what's happening, bro?
Hey, I'm just glad to be here. What can I say?
Awesome. So, what's going on with you, man? What you been up to? You know, how's everything been going?
Everything was going all right. Just trying to play a little bit of catch up. I've got probably a bunch of stuff, video footage I took at the Penny Arcade Expo East this year that I haven't gotten around to doing. I had a few issues crop up a couple weeks ago that kind of knocked me out of commission for a bit, but slowly but surely working on that. And then actually we just got a Schnoz Man and Hole Punch. The Justice League episode 4 coming out this Saturday, so it's been busy.
Sounds awesome. So later we're gonna get into some PAX East stuff because I didn't know you went to PAX East. I know that
Oh dear.
I know Phil at one point was talking about it, but then he decided not to go. But we'll get into that later. So let's start off though. You know, at the very beginning, you know, how did you and Phil and you and John meet up? You know, how did things kind of come from a beginning like that? You know, and then lead into everything else.
All right, well, a long, long time ago, in a small town not that far away, I started talking about video games with a friend of mine on the school bus. This was about middle school for me, like 7th or 8th grade. And I said something about video games, and this dude who's sitting a couple seats over says, "Huh, what was that?" And it was John. We just started talking about stuff because he lived in the same neighborhood we did, and he liked games too. So from that, we all just started John, myself, and a couple other friends, we just started hanging out every Friday. John would drive us around, take us to the local arcades where he would destroy everyone at Capcom versus SNK2, and I would lose horribly. And from there, our friendship just kind of grew and continued on after I went away to school, only getting to see him, on holidays and during the summer. But I ended up getting a job back in Connecticut, not too far from where John's living. And in that time, he met DSP and started hanging out with him. And when John was about to go over to Japan for Super Battle Opera, DSP convinced him to start up a YouTube channel. And people said, "Oh, no, show us about your trip." And I went to Japan with him, with John, and appeared in some of his videos there. And we just started recording there. And then when we got back, John's continued on with his channel, and then I helped him out with a couple of interviewing John things, was it John Ramble's mailbag, a few other things, and it just went on. I mean, it started really John knew Phil, I knew John. It's a trickle-down thing.
It was like a networking thing, pretty much.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So before we get into more questions, I want to find out a little bit of what was your experience like, with John over in Japan. Let me ask you this one, kind of standard to everybody I ask it to. What was like your introduction into video games, or like how did you start gaming, and what kind of like what was the spark that lit the flame?
Well, my first game was many years ago. I was a small child, and across from the post office, there was a corner store. And in this corner store, they had a Pac-Man machine. And I would beg my mom for quarters. I remember the first time I ever really remember playing a video game, I begged my mom for quarters and put them in. I thought I was the ghosts, and I was supposed to catch this yellow jerk who kept eating all of our little dots. So I'm chasing him around. I didn't get to play long, but I won every game. Because, the ghosts got Pac-Man, and yeah.
Awesome.
That
Anyway.
was it right there. That was like the beginning.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I mean, and from there, I'm pretty sure you went over to console gaming, as well as the rest of arcade
Yeah.
gaming.
Well, the console gaming thing was pretty funny. So the first time I met someone who was going to be like my best friend throughout elementary through high school, he just moved to the neighborhood. It was a fellow named Mark. And my parents were like, "Oh, new family neighborhood here. Let's introduce everybody." So they took me over to his house. And I never got a chance to play Nintendo or anything. So naturally, the first thing I say when I meet this kid, we walk into his house. I'm like, the first words I say, "Do you have Nintendo?" Like in this hyperactive little kid voice. He's like, "Yep." And I was so happy. And then he said, "But it's not hooked up yet."
Oh, that's
And
just
I was
cruel.
sad. Yeah. So I guess I kind of sharpened, I kind of, what is it? What's the word? Sharpened my teeth on the NES playing Tecmo Super Bowl, Mario Brothers, all that good stuff. Losing at Duck Hunt, getting laughed at by the dog.
Oh, that's just rude.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when I was a little kid, though, I was convinced I was the best person at cleaning out NES cartridges. I mean, you always had to blow into them, and I always thought, well, that's stupid. You're going to blow more dust in there. So, being the ingenious idiot that I was, I would cover most of the controller with the port with my hand, and then I'd actually inhale, trying to suck the dust out, not thinking that if you suck the dust out, it's going straight into your lungs.
That's hilarious on so many levels.
So on a completely unrelated note, I had asthma as a child.
Oh, man. Wow. But anyway, that after that one, that's crazy. But let's move on from there. You know, you mentioned you went to Japan with John. You know, if you haven't seen the videos out there, listeners, you know, go check out the videos. I believe it's on John Ramper Presents.
Yeah, they're all there.
They're all there. You know, when you guys went over to Super Battle Opera, which is also known as Togeki, you know, tell us a little bit, because we saw John's perspective and then we kind of got a little bit of insight from Phil, you know, when John went over there, you know, him describing it to him or whatnot. But what was your perspective from when you actually went down there with John? You know, what was it like for you hanging out in Japan, checking out this tournament that everybody's going nuts over, playing fighting games? What was it like?
Well, it was interesting for me because I had been to Japan once before. I studied abroad there in college. And it was strange because this time I was coming over with people I knew who didn't study Japanese, who don't think they had too much of an idea what to expect. So I got over there. I'm like, for me, it was a little bit of, this is weird. I'm back, but I haven't studied the language in 3 years. So it was strange because everything was familiar, because I lived just outside Tokyo for 3 months, but coming back, it was hard because I forgot so much of the language. I hadn't been there in so long. Every little trick and whatnot I remembered, like, didn't quite apply anymore. The saved game cards I brought back to the arcades didn't mean anything because the game was gone. So those stupid little cards paid $5 to be able to save my game and whatnot. Nope.
So much for that plan.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have a camera. All I had was a digital still camera that could take maybe 10 minutes of video and then fill up the memory card. So I was being rather frugal. So I didn't really take any video. I spent a lot of the time wandering around with John being the world's worst translator.
Oh, really?
I forgot so much of the language. I didn't start remembering it till like 2 days before John left. When we got to the tournament, it was great. We go up to the security desk, and they're asking some questions, and they're like, Hasami omotemasu ka? I'm like, Hasami? I'm thinking to myself, what is this word? I've heard it before. Then somebody finally comes over and says, do you have any knives on you? I'm like, wait,
At a video tournament?
Yeah, to make sure you weren't going into the convention center with knives or anything. The actual word they were using was apparently scissors, but the same deal. So I'm like, so finally we're just like, no. And they're like, oh, okay. And they just waved us through.
That must have been awkward.
It was kind of awkward. I mean, I felt pretty bad having forgotten all this stuff. I thought, you know, I was going to get over there and be like, yeah, John, all right, here's Akihabara. You know, you go this way, you go that way, you can do this, you can buy this. There's this store, there's that store. And mostly I was just like, yes, I dimly remember there being an arcade here and a video game store here.
That's crazy, man. But overall, was the trip overall fun for you? I mean, did you get to do like other things outside of the actual game tournament that was going on there?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. John and I and B-Ron, after the tournament, we started exploring a lot. I mean, we got to go to we were already pretty much done Akihabara a lot. But we wandered around to some other places. I don't remember if Biron came with us to Harajuku, but I know John and I went there, which is where they have all the really ridiculously dressed people and strange stores.
Did you guys go to a May Cafe?
Gosh, no, we didn't. Though we saw plenty of people advertising for them. It was fun explaining the concept.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we got to go see a few other things. I was kind of sad that John and B-Ron didn't have time to go with us to go to see the Imperial Gardens. I got to go there, I guess, I mean, I think the day after John and B-Ron flew home, I still had another 3 or 4 days in Japan. So I wandered around. I think I took maybe 100 or 200 pictures just at the gardens alone. It was pretty funny. I'm wandering around, you know, and then this old man comes up to me and he points at a tree. And he's like, mezurashii kinoko da yo. Yeah, mezurashii kinoko da yo. I'm like, what? And I'm thinking to myself, that's a rare mushroom? And I look up at the tree, and there's this weird mushroom hanging out of the boughs of a tree over there. And he's like, and he starts laughing and wanders off. I'm like, what?
That's awkward. Random.
It was pretty cool. I don't know why he thought I'd actually know Japanese, since I am totally a foreigner. But it was just kind of cool. Like, I'm there, you know, I'm wandering around this place all by myself. It's huge. I'm getting lost. There's pretty flowers everywhere. And then this guy just wanders over and starts talking to me. He's like, "That's a rare mushroom." And then wanders off, laughing.
That sounds like a mysterious message in the making there. Or something like that. But that's pretty crazy. So, you know, last thing before we kind of cut it off. So overall, you know, your trip to Japan, you know, outside of the gaming, you know, all that different types of culture and stuff that was going on with the tournament and things like that. It was pretty successful. You had a fun. Did you actually get a chance to maybe go explore some of the arcades down there?
Yeah.
Since you're a big arcade fan?
Yeah, we did. We got to go see pretty much all the big arcades near the main Akihabara train station. And then we went to, I think Mikado was the big, big, big one, where that was where all the fighting game players went. Like, before the tournament, this is where John and B-Ron and everybody went to go train, because they had, I think, for 500 yen, you could play. It was free play, like, for all night. And the more people who showed up, the more machines they convert to Street Fighter. And I remember I get there, and I played all night, and finally, I finally beat somebody in that arcade. That was like my shining moment.
That's an accomplishment. That's like achievement unlocked down there.
Pretty much. Too bad I hadn't been fireball cheesing. Okay, it wasn't that bad, but still.
Awesome. But anyway, you know, we're coming to the end of this first part of the interview. So, guys, be sure to check out part two as I continue to sit down with OJ here. And we'll be back in just a bit. You know, stay epic, people. Hey, what's going on, people? It's Venomous Fat Man here with ShiftedToYou.com. I'm here on The Bit, The Boys in the Tube. Right now, I'm sitting next to John Harrington, a.k.a. OJ, from Schnozman and Hole Punch, as well as The Show with John Rambo on John Rambo Presents. What's going on, OJ?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Just hanging out, vacuum in the other room.
Awesome. So with that being said, before in part one, we talked about, you know, some beginning stuff, you know, origins into gaming, how you met John, how you met Phil, you know, your trip to Tokyo, or not Tokyo, but just to Japan, just in general for Togeki, you know, which is Super Bad Opera. But let's get into some other stuff, you know, bouncing off of Japan, you know, You're a big anime fan.
A bit,
you know, since the last time I was on the show, you know, we talked a little bit about some anime, but let's kind of get more into depth with it. You know, how was your introduction into anime and stuff? What, you know, how did you get first into that stuff?
That started mostly with a kid who lived in my neighborhood who was friends with myself and John and my friend Mark. And he basically was like, "Hello, this is Trigun. You're going to watch this now." I'm like, "Okay." And, he also got me a couple other series to watch. Started with Trigun, then there was Cowboy Bebop was a little bit later. Evangelion was right there in the beginning.
All
and then,
good
oddly
animes.
Enough,
all very good animes.
And then Flame of Recca, interestingly enough, that was another early one for me, which is not as good as the other ones, but when you're in middle school and it's one of the first things you see, it's still pretty neat.
I mean, back in the day, I mean, did you ever grow up watching Toonami? Let me just ask you straight up front. Like, I mean, what did you think of Toonami? Just, you know, in a couple sentences.
I mean, I think it was a good way to get some of these shows out to people and let people get some more interest in the genre before advancing to actual stuff, maybe with less editing and sometimes actually using subtitles instead of dubs.
Yeah, so, but let me ask you that. Were you into anime before you got into Toonami? Because I know there's a lot of old school cats out there that were into anime, watching the real good stuff, maybe importing from Japan, way before Toonami was even around on Cartoon Network. But what was it like for you?
Well, for me, it was, so this stuff is actually on Cartoon Network now? That makes it a whole lot easier to watch. My friend, like one of my friends, he just had this stuff, so we watched it with him. And then when Toonami came out, we're like, guess I can watch two things now. You know, it made it a lot easier. I'd been watching it beforehand. And then once I got once I finally got a job in high school, I could actually start buying my own stuff too every now and then. So Toonami, I think it was before Toonami. I was just glad that, you know, other people could watch it, though the hipster part of me was kind of like, "Oh no, you have to watch it subtitled and uncut."
The real purist mentality almost.
I'm not as much of a snot now, but in middle school you have to be snooty about something.
Wow. But With that going, kind of springboarding off of that, what did you think when Toonami what got pulled off the air? Because, we got to talk about this. When Toonami went down, it was a big blow to a lot of people, especially if you grew up with it. And at the same time, or better yet, before I even get into that, tell me about, what was it like for you when Toonami went off the air?
I was kind of bummed. I mean, I'm trying to remember. Do you remember what year that was?
Oh
Gosh.
man, that was like, a good while ago. That had to be, a little after 2000, something like that.
Yes. I was just gra that must have been either when I was like in my later years of high school, probably. And at that point, I mean, I was pretty sad to see it go, but at that point, I think I'd been started working at Toys R Us of all places, and I had a little bit of a paycheck, so if I needed to get my fix, I could acquire it. But I mean, just where else were you going to watch that stuff once it was off of like once Tsunami was gone? Where were you going to see some of those things? Those shows were pretty much gone, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you could go online at the time. I mean, it was a little bit different than what it was now or what it is
Wild
now.
West back then.
But when it went off the air, there wasn't really a spot that you could go. You could if you had cable, maybe you could catch a few shows here and there, like
Yeah.
Vandred or something like that. But
But.
once it was gone, it was gone.
Yeah, I mean, as after that, I mean, the only time I was going to see anything was like randomly 5 minutes of Demon City Shinjuku on the Sci-Fi channel, and that
Oh
was the most I'd
God.
see.
Oh my God, sci-fi. To me, sci-fi was like one of the worst spots to watch anime. It's like it was just so bad. I mean, it was one thing with Cinemax, or I think it was Cinemax, something like that.
Yeah.
One of the like movie channels where they had like a couple shows here and there, but just
Yeah.
sci-fi was just like, what am I watching? Like, ugh.
What did you do?
But let me kind of go off from that as well. What did you think? Like, recently we just had, the whole April Fool's joke that Cartoon Network, played on us, which to me and to a lot of other anime fans was like opening old wounds. Like it just hit right there, for the moment. Like that same night, nobody that grew that knew what Tsunami was went to sleep that night. What was it like for you?
Just don't. I mean, my deal with that was like, I don't have cable right now. I just have cable internet, so it didn't hit me as hard. But like, you don't taunt people, man. Like, what are you doing? Who are you? I mean, Cartoon Network, you've got Adult Swim, and I'm kind of happy you had some cool stuff on there. But don't taunt people about Toonami, man. That little dude from back in the day before they gave him his
Tom.
weird pregnant stomach. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Speaking of Tom, for the record, a little fun fact for everybody, maybe you could attest to this as well. They kept asking on Twitter, to see if people wanted Tsunami back, and they probably got bombarded on their Twitter feed and their emails.
Oh man.
But yeah, so that was like, a pretty like, crazy time, and I'm pretty sure I hope to God that they would bring it back. Should they bring Tsunami back, OJ?
I think it's worth a shot if they're the trick is putting on good programming that hasn't been butchered.
Yeah.
Like that's always the worry. We're always the worry of getting anime on like a cable network.
Yeah, so let's talk about this though. Since you mentioned, subtitles and stuff like that, what's like the optimal way to watch anime? Like for me personally, it's always different. It's not usually necessarily just dubs or subs like that. Usually it's on an anime to anime basis. Like for example, I can't watch the subbed version of Dragon Ball Z because Goku's voice is just way too annoying for me. I can't stand it, but it might be different for some people, What's your stance on the whole thing?
I mean, I could see it going on a series by series basis. I mean, I prefer to watch stuff in Japanese mostly so I can lie to myself and say I'm practicing the language. But I mean, I've seen a lot of shows like I watched all of Darker Than Black in English, and the later the late as more time goes on, the dubs are getting better. I mean, I still would rather watch. I mean, even the, I mean, the dub for Cowboy Bebop was
Oh my
incredible.
God, yeah,
Don't get me
it's
wrong.
amazing.
I still prefer to watch things subtitled. I mean, I saw the second half of Code Geass in English. I
Oh,
saw all
that's
of Darker
good.
Than Black in English, and those worked pretty darn well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the English voice actors, I think, I mean, it might have been they were always doing a good job, but maybe the people who were directing them weren't didn't really know what as much of what they were doing. I don't know, back in the day. But my personal stance, prefer to watch subbed. Dubbed is okay in a lot of situations. There's sometimes when I can't stand it. For example, I watched Fullmetal Alchemist, the original series, in Japanese, and then I started trying to watch Brotherhood on Netflix, which watch instantly, which is only in English, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. To me, Ed and Al have their voices, and it just doesn't work. like if I've heard it subbed first, it's really, really hard to watch it dubbed unless it's like Code Geass where they did an awesome job.
Yeah, like the animes that you're mentioning are all great. I mean, Code Geass, Cowboy Bebop especially, and then the spiritual successor to it, Samurai Champloo. I mean,
yeah,
all those animes are just awesome. But let me ask you this, you know, for you personally, what's like the more optimal way to watch an anime? Would it be basically on DVD, or would it be online, or but just basically through regular standard television?
That's a tough call. I mean, because the like if you're watching it on a DVD or a Blu-ray, it's great because you've probably got the whole series, but you gotta stand up to swap out the disc. And, you know, I don't know if I've got the energy for that. If I pay $35 for something, someone got to walk over, hit the button for me. I'm not standing up for that nonsense. Like, I've watched there's a few shows you can watch on Netflix, watched instantly, which are in Japanese, which was awesome because you just sit there and you're like, next episode, next episode. I think I prefer to watch. If I can afford the DVDs or the Blu-ray, I prefer to watch it there, if only because I feel like I'm supporting the people who made the show more. But like if you're watching it on like something like Crunchyroll or even YouTube there's ads, but you can watch a ton of shows right there for free with like 2 or 3 2-minute ads.
Funimation even has like their own YouTube channel, Bandai does, where they put their shows up and you can watch them.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty cool. If you don't want to shell the cash out for the DVDs, I'd go there next. And if that doesn't work, you got Netflix. I mean, maybe Amazon Watch Instantly. I don't know what they got on there, but I do like the DVD thing. I mean, I keep an eye out for sales. Like I saw Claymore was on sale on Blu-ray for $28 or for $30 or $28 for the DVDs. So I'm like, yeah, I love that show. And I had the money for it at the time, so I just picked it up. And watching that, I felt awesome. I'm like, oh, man, I don't have to feel bad about getting the autograph from the English voice actor, even though I haven't actually heard the show in English.
Yeah, all right. That's pretty crazy. So let's move away a little bit from there. Let's talk about conventions a little bit because, you know, anime fans, we all go to our conventions. All as gamers, we go to conventions. You know, you've been to a couple conventions already. You know, for the most part, it's from some of the videos that you've gone to. You know, tell us what's it like, you know, when you're going to a convention. What is it that you look for, or what is it that you go in expecting to have?
All right. Well, the first thing I'm really thinking about is whether I feel like bothering to dress up. Because I've been too lazy to make a new costume for the past couple years, so I've been going just as me recently. So once I got that out of the way, I'll make a list of what... Because there's usually some really awesome panels, some new shows are debuting, stuff like that. You know, stuff that... I mean, you're not going to see anywhere else. But most of the time I go to these conventions, I just wander around photographing people, talking to people, walking by all the crazy nonsense for sale, and then hanging out in the artist's alley, seeing what sort of ridiculous creative things people have come up with.
That's pretty cool. So you also, you know, during, I believe it, I forgot which convention that it was that you guys went to. I think it was Too Many Games, or was it MAGFest? I think that you were actually selling candles.
Yeah, MAGFest and New York Comic Con.
Yeah, New York Comic Con, that was the other one, where you actually had a table there and you were selling off candles. Like, tell us a little bit about the candles that you actually sell.
All right, well, it's pretty funny. The only reason I ended up doing these in the first place was because I was walking through a supermarket and I saw in the 50% off bin how to make gel candles. And I'm like, well, that looks interesting. I picked it up, I walked up to the register to buy it, and it wouldn't scan. And then randomly, a guy I took a community college acting class with worked at the Stop and Shop, rang it up for me for like $1. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Thank you, sir. And then from that, I just started experimenting around. So I make candles that use a clear translucent gel that you can color and scent. So, you know, it looks like, so I realized you can like freeze a scene in mid-shot and suspend things in there and have them floating around and whatnot. So I started making things like the first ones I made for myself were I made a scene from Super Mario Brothers with a piranha plant, a bullet bill, and another bullet bill, and some mushrooms just chilling out on the ground. Like, and the bills are flying, like they're just suspended in there. Nothing, ain't got no strings or none of that nonsense from Pinocchio. And I just thought, wow, you know, this is pretty fun. It took a lot of time, but I'm really enjoying this. So I just started. So for my friends for Christmas, I just started throwing stuff together. Like, one of my friends really liked Gurren Lagann, so I made him the symbol from Kamina's jacket and the drill, and I suspended them in there not touching anything, just kind of floating in the middle. I made something from Slayers for another friend of mine, Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I just started making them, and then I realized, you know, I could probably sell these. So I got back from Otakon thinking, man, I see all this cool stuff here. Why am I not doing this? So I just got in gear, found a convention I could sell at, got a friend to split the table with me because these things are expensive, and just started putting stuff together. Like, I was putting together Cheap Cheeps, some custom fish. I put fairies in a bottle. And then I had another crazy idea. I have wine glasses.
Oh, there you go.
So I poured some gel in there, you know, set the wick and everything, and I colored it red and gave it like a raspberry apple flavor. Scent, not flavor. Do not eat. Do not eat. And people just started going nuts for them. Like, I was expecting like gamers and anime fans and whatnot to go nuts, but like anything that looked remotely like a beverage, people were going nuts for. So I had some root beer floats, and someone's like, "Oh, it's a Guinness." I'm like, "Yes, it's totally a Guinness and not a root beer float."
Wow.
Do smell. It is cinnamon. And it worked out. So over the past, you know, 9 months on and off, I've been putting stuff together. I've got a little bit of a stock built up, and I wanted to sell it online. But a friend of mine's like, dude, do not put those things out there until you get an LLC so no one can sue you to death. Because if someone sets their house on fire, you're the first one they're going after.
Oh, yeah. That's a good quote. That's a good piece of advice to kind of defend yourself a little bit. But that's interesting. I mean, you have a website that's, you know, you have some of this stuff, you know, actually on display. I'm actually looking at it now. It's geekfiregifts.com. And he's got, you know, a bunch here, you know, on display of stuff that you're actually selling, pretty sure. And then when you go to the conventions, you also sell them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. So we're going to end this part off right here, guys. You know, be sure to check out the next part, which is part 3, as I continue to sit down with OJ here on The Bit. We'll talk to you all in a second. Hey, what's going on, guys? It's been a Spam Man here. Also Project 7 and the show on John Rampo Presents. And we've been talking about a whole bunch of stuff. We talked about some anime. We talked about his origins in gaming, as well as, you know, introduction into anime, his trip to Japan. We talked about his candles over at geekfiregifts.com. We got a whole bunch of stuff that we talked about in the first two parts. If you have not listened to them, please go check out part 1 and part 2 of the actual interview. So, OJ, let's get right into the next stuff that I pretty much, you know, all the fans out right now, they want to know more about Schnozman and Hole Punch, you know, the series that you and John have pretty much created, that you guys have filmed. You know, you guys got a couple episodes out, whatnot. So tell us, you know, the beginning of the actual kind of, you know, the ideology and, you know, the creation of Schnozman and Hole Punch. You know, what kind of sparked that one? What kind of created it and started it up?
All right. Well, so John and I do the show every week, and usually either beforehand or afterward, we start talking about stuff and, you know, just plans, what we want to do next, blah, 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 blah. And John had said, you know, we should try and come up with some ideas for some more original content we can do. And I said, okay, that's a good thought. So, you know, before the next week, John and I went off to do our thing and started trying to come up with stuff that we could maybe do, like, you know, record a series or something. And, pardon me, I'm sorry. Should have had more water and less pizza. But so John and I reconvened, and, you know, he asked me if I had any ideas, and I listed a couple of things, and then he listed something that was actually a good idea, which was some sort of a superhero, like, roommates type deal. Like, these are the issues that, I mean, these are superheroes, but they got to deal with all these regular issues, you know, about having a roommate and living life and blah, 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 all that other stuff. We thought, okay. So we sat down and scripted out like a basic plot, you know, a couple arcs and whatnot for what we want to happen, you know, where we think it will go, what characters we want. And it slowly started becoming the characters started to come out. John was like, all right, we're going to have one guy who's kind of a little bit of a pushover. He's kind of failing at everything. You know, he's not doing a great job, but he keeps trying. And then this other guy is kind of a jerk to him. And we had to try and figure out who was going to be who. And naturally, I ended up as the little pushover guy. But, you know, we thought about it real hard. And, like, okay, that works. And we had to come up with names. John came up with Schnozman. And I ended up coming up with Hole Punch. He designed the costume for Schnozman with a little bit of help from, one of the listeners to the show. John said, hey, I think it was Hazer.
Was it Hazer? Really?
I can't remember. I'm so sorry that I forgot your name. Please, please excuse my terribleness. And we said, hey, John said, hey, I need a logo, like it's a nose. And John put together that costume. And then I went, all right. I started doodling stuff out. I went over to the Sports Authority and to Modell's looking for stuff. I'm like, and I planned out, you know, what my costume was going to look like. Found pieces that matched it. Made a logo out of clay. I had plenty laying around from the whole candle nonsense. And we built our characters up. And then we scripted out the first episode. We're like, all right, this is what it's going to be. This is how they meet and everything. And after we did that first episode, what John didn't tell me was if it didn't do well, he was going to say, all right, that's it. It's over. And I was expecting to continue doing the series no matter what. Thankfully, it was rather well received. So we were able to, you know, continue with the show. We're actually about to release our fourth episode, which took more effort than all the other three. And I think it came out really well. So John has come up with most of the dialogue. I mean, is John's genius. I mean, he puts this stuff together. Like when it comes to writing, I'm like kind of a consultant. Like I help him with the plots, I help him just maybe tweak stuff here and there. But oh my gosh, John's dialogue. I mean, I just love the way he phrases things. And then the monologues, the shots. Like he asks me if we know of any cool places where I live that we can go by and film and. We drive around, find interesting things. It's been a lot of work.
It sounds like it's very interesting, though. Like, it's been very fruitful. I know a lot of people have watched it, you know, over on John Ramper Presents ever since you guys put the first three episodes on. If you guys haven't seen those three episodes yet, go check them out over on John's YouTube channel, John Ramper Presents. One question I got to ask is, you know, because since you guys, you know, kind of collaborate a little bit, even though I guess you could say John comes up with the bulk of most of the stuff for the show, like, what is the inspiration for a lot of the stuff that you get? Because when I look at it, you know, I see a couple things. I see, obviously, from different superheroes, you know, from different comics or whatnot, but also I look at it and I get a little bit of like from Dexter's Laboratory a little bit as far as the premise.
Yeah.
because if you guys have ever seen Dexter's Laboratory, you know, for the listeners out there, they have a thing called the Justice Friends where it's literally three superheroes under the same premise living underneath one roof in an apartment.
Oh yeah, Krug and
yeah, Krug, was it Major Glory
and Valhalla.
And Valhalla, yeah, exactly.
Van Halen plus Thor.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty cool. You know, it's interesting that, like, you know, you could get stuff from like that. But what is, like, the real inspirations from the show, like, for all three of the episodes that you've done, including up to the fourth episode, which is coming out soon?
Well, I think Schnozman was supposed to be, like, I don't know where John was coming from, but I kind of see him. He reminds me a little bit of, like, I don't know if I want to go so far as to say the comedian from Watchmen, because he is a controversial character with his own issues, but he seems like this jaded fellow who's seen everything. And then you've got Hole Punch, who's like this guy who's failing at every turn, but he keeps trying and thinks he's doing a really good job. You know, he's doing his best out there. He's not going to give up. And to me, he was basically broke Batman. Like, what if Batman has all the... Yeah, he didn't have any money. He had nothing. His signature weapon is a plunger, for crying out loud. I mean, I had a lot of fun. I like to think that a lot of Hole Punch came from me and, you know, my experiences and my thoughts for what would be, kind of a funny superhero. I know I named the guy. I think I named the Hole Plunge as well, which is his amazing plunger tool, as John put it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But, yeah, like... Basically, a Batman who's, you know, not quite that dark, although he has every reason to be, but isn't quite that capable and doesn't have the resources. Just a guy who wants to do some good, you know?
Yeah, obviously, you know, that's what all superheroes want to do, at least, you know, in some form or fashion at some point like that. But one thing's I want to ask you guys, like, when you're writing your material, do you look at stuff like, you know, like any like sort of cartoons or superhero cartoons, or like, you know, in the case of like the outfits and stuff, like every time that I see those outfits, it always screams to me a little bit of Jay and Silent Bob. Like, as far as like the craziness of the outfits, because, you know, just in that same superhero that I think it was Bluntman and Chronic. I think those
were Bluntman and Chronic
for Jay and Silent Bob. It kind of reminds me of that, you know, as far as like, you know, borderline on the ridiculous, you know, just the over exaggerated and stuff. But what is like some of the stuff that you guys check out in order to kind of, you know, really come up with the writing and some of the different ideas for the show?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I think what John and I are doing is trying to, without going to anything in particular, from my perspective, we're reaching into, you know, our memories, stuff we remember. Like, we're not going out and saying, "All right, I better go read Blunt Man and Chronic to see what sort of silly stuff these guys are up to," or "I'd better see what sort of dark and creepy thing Batman is saying that we can parody over here." It's more like, I mean, John and I have seen a lot of comic book movies, read a ton of comic books. We've seen all the shows and whatnot. So we've got a lot of this stuff just lurking in our heads, and we just sit down and think, you know, what's something that people do all the time, or something that would just be really funny if it were changed slightly, like twisted to be something a little bit like not quite right. Like, we're parodying the Justice League, and, you know, they're the most upstanding individuals in the entire earth.
Yeah.
But here it looks like they're a bunch. It's like if you listen to Aquaman talking, he's like, "Now it's time to become a part of something that matters." I mean, that's a little snooty. But, you know, we've got our own take on everything. You know, this world that it's obvious there's a lot of heroes in there. Like, you've got Raposa, who's basically who's played by Andre from Respect the Pact, and he's basically if Zorro were a complete, like, egotistical, narcissistic guy. I mean, he's not a bad person. He's doing the right thing, but he's doing it for the fame. It looks like he wants the fame. He wants, you know, he wants the money. So we're like pulling things from here and there that we're not like seeking it out and saying, I need to find something to use for episode five. It's more like, this is what we think is going to happen in episode five. Who's going to be there? What's the driving force? Like, it's weird. Like, a lot of our research was done when we were teenagers and growing up and just reading things like for fun.
That's cool. So, you know, so you guys got episode four coming out soon. You know, when is episode four exactly going to drop on YouTube?
Episode 4 of Schnozman and Hole Punch, The Justice League, premiering this Saturday, May the 12th, around noon, at some
Awesome.
point, we hope.
You hope. But that sounds cool. Can you give us a little kind of like preview or a little insight of what episode 4 is going to be like or what it might be about?
Episode 4 has a lot of things in it. More so than any other episode, this is going to be an episode that has a lot of emotion and a lot of humor. Not necessarily at the same time, but this is going to be an episode where you really get to see a little bit more of who the characters are and how they react in extreme situations. There's a lot to say with, but phrasing it without giving anything away.
Yeah.
You're also going to see a lot. You're going to see a few more, some more extra characters you haven't seen before as well. So you get to see Schnozman and Hole Punch interacting with more than just each other.
That's pretty
Which,
cool.
yeah, we had a we called in the cavalry on this one. I think everyone's going to be really happy with it.
Sounds interesting. Sounds pretty cool. Okay, so you'll be able to see it this Saturday, more likely at, you know, around noontime on John Rambo Presents, which is pretty
Yep.
cool. So moving away from that, because you know there's another project now that you're also involved with. That's Project Seven, which is like
Yes,
the
indeed.
big thing, you know, between, you know, yourself. You got John that's involved with it. You got Howard that's involved on it. Then you also got Phil, you know, from DSP that's involved on it. It's like, you know, a big collective thing amongst all of you guys, and you know, people go nuts about it. You know, I've seen already the first couple episodes that you guys have done. You know, what's it been like, you know, because you were on episode three of Project Seven. You know, what was it like actually filming the episode?
Well, I got to say that Paul and Dre from Respect the Pact, they are professionals. They know what they're doing. They know how to do it. And they're amazing at what they do. Y'all should really check out Respect the Pact, their channel and everything, because they are really amazing filmmakers and pretty cool people. Just, it was weird because you've got John, Phil, and Howard in the room. And they're three very distinct personalities. And then you've got Respect the Pact, Dre and Paul putting everything together. You know, everyone worked on the script. Everyone's got all the stuff they need to do. And then just watching it all come together. And then it feels so different from the final episode because you can see everything goes on in the background from fire extinguisher mishaps to green screens to line flubs. It's really amazing watching like all these guys working together on something that, you know, on a project like this, collaborating and to make something, you know, it's pretty crazy.
Sounds like a lot of work and stuff. Like, what were some of the
Yeah.
hardships specifically, you know, from your perspective when you guys were actually shooting episode three? I believe it was episode three of Respect the Pact. I mean, of Project Seven, Respect the Pact. I meant Project Seven.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, hardships from my point of view, I mean, it was tough. We all had to remember stuff, and we had to, and it was tough because it's not like we're doing like dress rehearsals or anything beforehand. So everything everyone did, they did on their own. Any preparation and whatnot, then we have to get there and do it together. And you don't know what it's gonna look. We didn't know what it was gonna look like till we got there. I'm sure Dre and Paula had some ideas in their head on how to frame everything along with everyone else, but getting that out there. The hardest thing for me personally, though, was trying not to break my back being killed 7 to 9 times. I played the generic Metal Gear guard, and by the, I mean all of them.
You mean that guy?
Yeah, that guy. What was that noise? I mean, like, there were so many death scenes for me. It was hard too, because when someone's shooting you with a prop gun, there's no clicking noise. There's nothing to let you know that a bullet's coming out. It's tough, especially being knifed, because they have to knife either near your head or accidentally hurt you. So you have to know when to fall down. It was hard to get that right. That, and I'm like throwing myself downstairs, throwing myself off of chairs, diving to the floor, and every time a take gets messed up for any reason, I'd have to kill myself again.
Oh man.
So personally, that was tough. My neck and back were aching for a while. I am no stuntman.
That's crazy. But I mean, it ended up coming out good in the long run because it was a good episode. A lot of people saw it. Do you think maybe we could expect to see you in episode 4 down the line, or episode 5, or any other future episodes?
I would hope that's the case. I mean, it's a lot of fun working with these guys, and they're all pretty cool people, so I would love to do more with them. I really would.
So far, like when you guys were actually coming up or actually shooting Project 7, did they include you on like the actual creation process of like, what the story, how the story was going to play out, or putting any sort of input on how the story was going to play out?
They had done most of the scripting and stuff before I was involved, but like I had a couple of suggestions that I gave to John, and the cardboard box scene in the episode, which didn't end up the way I envisioned it in my head, but that was something I really wanted to do, because in Metal Gear there's a lot of people hiding in, Snake's always hiding in a stupid box, and the guards are just like, oh, it's just a box, instead of shooting it to pieces, which is what I was going for. But yeah, I didn't have too much input into that one, but it worked out all right. I mean, I did manage to, however, be the guy who brought along Gaseous Snake. The fellow chap who played Gaseous is a friend of mine, and eventually John's from high school. So that was my big contribution. Forget being the guard, I brought the villain.
There you go. That's something that's pretty cool. So pretty much, you guys obviously down the line, Project 7, episode 3 is, it's already in the bag. I'm pretty sure way down the line you'll be able to get to episode 4. That sounds like it'd be cool to have you in it. Sounds like it'd be a lot of fun and stuff.
I'd love to.
But anyway, we're coming up towards the end of this interview, guys. So any like specific people you want to shout out, OJ, or any like last minute messages you want to give out to all the fans or anybody out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, again, everyone, please watch Nozman and Hole Punch this Saturday, May the 12th, around noon at John Rambo Presents YouTube channel. But I also want to say, hey, my friend Pete's got this pretty sweet idea for something he calls the Global Manga Initiative. Check it out at gmimanga.com. It's for a collective of artists, someplace to display your comics and works and whatnot. Just check it out. He'll appreciate the hits. It's a work in progress, but it should be up pretty soon. I mean, there's my own channel, Fresh OJ Some Pulp. I don't post very often, but I'm putting out some PAX East footage here and there. And yeah, and if anybody has a particular candle idea, every now and then I've got some time for commissions, so go right ahead, email me at john@geekfiregifts.com, and let's see, and we can see if I can work something out for you. Oh, right, and if I forgot to mention, there's Schnozman and Hole Punch episode 4 this Saturday, May the 12th at around noon.
Yeah, so make sure that you guys check it out. Also, don't forget to send in those emails for John, for OJ to actually, do any commissions that you guys might have. You say that you pretty much do are willing to do any sort of type of commission that anybody's willing to, to talk about for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, it's a little hard to say. Well, like if someone says, "I'd like an M.C. Escher painting," I'm like, I don't know if I can break the laws of physics and perspective, but I'll try.
It's so pretty cool though. But anyway, guys, you could check out OJ on his YouTube channel, Fresh OJ Some Pulp. That's on YouTube. As well as also he's on Twitter. You could also follow him on Twitter, Fresh OJ Some Pulp on Twitter. And also don't forget to go to geekfiregifts.com, to check out all his stuff with his candles, or to send him an email and all that stuff. And also don't forget to check out the new episode of Schnozman and Hole Punch when it goes up this Saturday. So thanks again, OJ, for being on the bit. It was a pleasure. It was fun chatting it up with you guys, with you. on this episode.
Oh, it's been fun for me too.
It's been really cool. Now I got a full complete set of all you guys for the most part. I got
Oh,
it.
yeah. You just reminded me.
What's up?
Also, for Project 7 or the show t-shirts, you can go to geekfiregifts.com/shop. I almost forgot.
Oh,
Phew.
that's a good thing. Say that again so that way they get it. It's, use the cool voice too.
Do you need a shirt? Do you find your nakedness to be appalling? Well, have a better body image. You may enhance this image by going to geekfiregifts.com/shop and purchasing a Project 7 or the show t-shirt. Supplies are limited.
Now that's pretty cool. But anyway, yep, thanks again, OJ. It was a pleasure. Had a
Oh, thank you,
blast.
man.
I hope you guys out there enjoyed the interview. Be sure to be on the lookout for my next interview. Be sure to also check out the full interview that I had with OJ. Make sure that you guys checked out part one and part two, as well as any of the other interviews I've had in the past. So from Venomous Fat Man and OJ here, this has been The Bit, The Boys in the Tube. I'm signing off. Stay epic, everybody.